Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. Hour 2, we're live. It's Thursday. The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. One of the things I really liked about Giannis, Joy Taylor, and I know it's not lit, it's not cool, and it's sometimes viewed as kind of corny, but he's really grateful, and I like grateful. Grateful is an important thing. Every day I come home from work, I open the door, and my dogs, Yossi and Buddy, run to the door, and for like 3 minutes, the tails are hitting me in the leg. And I think about that every day. There is no price on that affection. There's no price on that. I love walking into my house and my dogs rushing in. And I always feel like so eternally grateful. Like when my wife and I just moved, part of it was we thought the dogs deserved a bigger yard. And I said to my wife, that was probably the worst real estate decision. We're literally moving because our dogs don't have enough room. But I'm like, they bring me so much joy to my life.
Right.
And it's like, you know, they're just great partners and they're funny.
Yeah, dogs love us despite ourselves.
In fact, I read a study the other day where dogs, because they've been so domesticated for the last 100 years in America, that they really do get our nonverbal cues, that dogs read us. They constantly
read. Yeah, they're very intuitive.
And they've said even other smart animals, mammals, they don't read us like dogs do because they've been part of our lives in America for hundreds of years. And so dogs watch our verbal cues. They listen to our voice. Are we mad? You watch a dog and they're just reading us the whole time. And I'm very grateful for that anyway. And I thought Ryan Russillo brought up a great point last hour about Aaron Rodgers, is that I hear a lot about what he doesn't have in Green Bay. But can we just talk for a minute about what he does have? Like if I was a quarterback in the NFL, and I think you will agree with me here, the first thing I'd want is, you got to give me a weapon. Davante Adams is beyond special. Second thing is, I got to have protection. I'm not going to throw running for my life. Green Bay this year will once again have a better than average offensive line. In fact, since he's been starting quarterback, they've had 5 different offensive linemen make the Pro Bowl multiple times. I don't think this is one of their best, but it's still a top 10-ish offensive line. I would want some semblance of a running game. Oh, they've got Aaron Jones. I think the most underrated back in the league and a top 3 back. I'd want a progressive coach. You know, somebody that's not living in the past. Matt LaFleur's pretty good. He's in that McVay, Kyle Shanahan, LaFleur, they're all boys. I'd want a decent defense. I don't want to have to win shootouts. Right now they have the 9th best defense in the NFL. They could use an edge rusher. Yeah, so could everybody. You know, not name the Chicago Bears. Everybody needs an edge rusher. I'm not even going to mention the home field advantage. I'm not going to mention they've had almost no institutional chaos. I'm not going to mention their tight end, who they drafted in later rounds at 11 touchdowns. I'm not going to mention the easy division. Aaron's got a lot. Now, does he have the situation as good as Patrick Mahomes? No. The two athletes in my life who literally left college and hit the lottery. Magic Johnson goes to the Lakers and Kareem. Okay, that's pretty good. And Mahomes gets Andy Reid, all these weapons, and it's a really functional organization that made the playoffs before he was there, and he gets Alex Smith to teach him for a year. So, yeah, you don't have a Mahomes situation. You don't. All right, it's one. Seattle, they've had coordinator and offensive line issues and a defensive coach who wants to run the ball only. Buffalo, they just finally got their act together. They have their offensive line is okay. They have no run game. Baltimore, you know, it's great. They don't have a legitimate receiver. They don't have anything resembling Davante Adams. And that division's tough. That's a tough division. You get Detroit twice a year. Chicago's going to start a rookie quarterback 2 times this year. So, yeah, you don't have what Tom Brady has now. But you had better weapons than Tom did for much of your career. I mean, Tom now has leverage. At your age, he didn't have any leverage. He was trapped. He couldn't get out. People forget Tom won a bunch of Super Bowls early and late. He went 10 years in the middle. He didn't. And by the way, the entire time he didn't, they were drafting quarterbacks. One in the third round, one in the fourth. Then they drafted Garoppolo in the second. And Tom was still the best quarterback, arguably, in the league. Hey, Ryan Russillo, I thought last hour, summed it up very nicely.
This entire Aaron Rodgers saga has been rather vague. Like, I like Aaron Rodgers. I clearly like him more than you. But this Packers team is a Super Bowl contender. It's not like he's been with a team here for a decade plus that's never had any chance. And it's like, you know what? I get it. Rodgers is really special, and now he wants to move on. But this entire saga, Colin, I feel like, you know, I need to, like, you're playing the victim. Convince me you're the victim, okay? Convince me you're the victim. Because just drafting Jordan Love and not getting a heads up is not enough.
Brady was not given a heads up on Garoppolo or any of the quarterbacks. They drafted a quarterback in the third round in the middle of his Super Bowl drought, couldn't play a lick. I didn't give him a heads up. I understand. I would have. I think it's the right thing to do. I just had dinner with the GM a couple nights ago, and he said, with an older quarterback, we told him every year, we like this kid if he's available in the second. And he said the quarterback didn't like it. I mean, by the way, the Colts a couple times had to tell Peyton Manning, we're going to draft a quarterback. Peyton doesn't like it. Reportedly, Phillip Rivers didn't like it when the Chargers told him. So they don't have to like it. I do think the Packers owed Aaron a heads up. But there's a lot more that Aaron has than what he doesn't have. Take Mahomes out is pretty good. Green Bay's had no institutional chaos. This morning I went and counted teams that I consider to be either poorly owned or poorly run, like the Texans, the Jets. I got to like seven. That's a quarter of the league has got either bad ownership or a clown show in the front office. Green Bay never does. It's always institutionally highly functional, above average O-lines. He's always had a star receiver. Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams. They've always had a productive tight end. Now, defense, he's never had a great defense. But this one's nine. And when he won the Super Bowl, they were top 10. It's not like they've been bottom. It's not like they were Dallas. It's not, let's not kid ourselves here. It's not horrible. They do need a rush end, and I do believe they should have found a way to get J.J. Watt. I thought he was a great fit for them. But, you know, Aaron's making $37 million a year. Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, they're not taking pay cuts. Makes it a lot harder to get J.J. Watt. Antoine Walker, 12 years in the NBA, a three-time NBA All-Star, won a world championship with the Miami Heat. The season is complete. He is now joining us live. So, you know, I'm asking everybody the last 2 days, because I can get caught up in the emotion. I said it does feel like in the NBA car of stars, Giannis is driving it and everybody's in the back seat. But I could also be a little caught up in the moment. Let me just simplify it. Is he the best player, in your opinion, in the league, everything included today?
He's the best player in the league right now. And after this finals performance, it was the icing on the cake. But he's the best two-way player. It's not just about his offensive skills. I think it's because of his defensive skills. I mean, this guy can guard 1 through 5. You saw that in game 6, the way he was guarding Chris Paul throughout that game, and then he can obviously go guard the 5-man, and obviously rims protects. And then offensively, I thought he's actually learned and got better throughout the playoffs how to control his game. Less jump shots, no more random bad threes. He stayed away from those, attacking the basket, staying in his zone. And then obviously game 6, shooting the free throws the way he did was incredible. But I just think he's the best all-around player, two-way player we got in the league right now. And he's 26 years old, and it's crazy price. He got 2 MVPs and the finals MVP, and he can get much better, and that's scary.
Yeah, and I also think you have to consider health and KD and Kawhi and AD. It's part of their resume. They get dinged up. They're more brittle. And I do think in life, in the NBA, you deserve credit for being big, great, and healthy. Health it matters, and I can't think of AD or KD without the injuries. It is interesting, though. Milwaukee's not going to be a big free agent hub. I've compared him to a little bit like San Antonio, where Duncan and Giannis are these like humble and grateful stars, and you're surrounded with, you know, your Manus and your Middletons. Does it feel like to you this will last years, or this is kind of a Dallas Mavericks 2011 one and done?
I think you got a couple years of this, probably about another 3 years of them playing at a very, very high level. Their big four is under contract for the next 3 to 4 years, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So your big four are all coming back, and I'm including Brooke Lopez in that big four. They do have some problems in the offseason, which they got to take care of, and I think they become major problems. I think P.J. Tucker's 36 years old. Do you bring him back, and how much money do you pay him? Then you got Bobby Portis, a guy who played tremendous for them, brings them toughness. He will opt out his contract. I don't know this for sure, but he's making $3.5 million next year. I got to see him opting out. And do you bring him back? So those are two key guys that they're going to have to take care of in the offseason. And if they do that, that shows a commitment to that they believe that they can win multiple titles and they can have a shot at it. They got to go through the Brooklyn. Well, I shouldn't say they have to go through the Brooklyn Nets because we're getting caught up in names. But the Brooklyn Nets is probably the one team that they're going to have to go through on a consistent basis if those big three stay together. So I like where Milwaukee's at right now because their big four is taken care of contractually. And then they only have to take care of two guys, and hopefully they step up and do that.
The other thing about Milwaukee is their four best players all play defense. Middleton plays defense. Holiday plays it. Brooke Lopez, Giannis. Three of them play at a very high level. So that whereas Brooklyn's got stars, but Durant's about the only guy that commits on the defensive end. Segueing and pivoting to Chris Paul. He will get offers. He can opt out. If you were his agent, you're Chris Paul's agent, stay in Phoenix, go to the Lakers, what would you tell him to do?
I would tell Chris Paul to stay with Phoenix. I just think, obviously, he would be a great fit with the Lakers. I think, he would have a legitimate chance to win another title. Not saying he can't do it in Phoenix, but obviously in Phoenix, it's going to be a little bit harder because you got some teams in the Western Conference that's going to be a lot better. Golden State will be a lot better next year. Hopefully, if they're healthy, they'll be right back in the mix. The Lakers will be a lot better as well. So you got some teams that'll be tough, but if I'm Chris Paul, I will opt out because he should. It's a business. This is a league and it's a business. He deserves more money. He played well enough the last 2 years and after getting to the finals this year to deserve a contract extension. Now, what I would do if I'm Chris Paul, I know I can't beat the organization up and put us in a position where we can't keep a Cameron Payne. He can't play 40 minutes a night anymore. So you got to try to bring back a good bag of point guard and Cameron Payne. So if I was Chris, I'd probably take a 3-year, $100 million deal, but start that number at $30 million. He's supposed to make $44 million, so you knock off $14 million a year. But just bring that number down a little bit to help the organization out. And he deserves an opportunity to try to get this team back there. They're young, but also kind of, they got to remember this. Those guys have got to get better, too. It can't just be Chris Paul comes back and they get there. The guys in their roster got to get better. Bridges, Johnson. Devin Booker's got to get a little bit better. He had a tough stretch there, and we know how great he was in the playoffs. So it's about guys putting the effort in, getting a little taste of being in the finals, and wanting to get back there.
You know, it's interesting about the super teams. Your Miami team in 2006, it's Shaq, it's Wade, it's you. If I recall, Gary Payton. I mean, it's just a lot of big names. And that was – you guys were all-star level players. Do you, when you go look at your Miami experience, I always feel like the downside to a super team like Brooklyn, you can't have much of a bench, and like sometimes musical bands, egos break it up. Because whereas I do think Middleton knows it's not his team, it's Giannis. Like he knows that. Pippen knew it was Jordan's team. It lasted a long time. And I think the Spurs, Manu and Tony Parker knew it's Duncan's team. But then you get situations like Kyrie probably thinks he's better than Durant and James Harden. Take me back to your Miami experience. When did you start feeling during it, all right, I can sense the egos a little bit. We all want that shot. Was it fine for a year and a half? But when did you kind of feel like it's not going to last forever?
Well, the crazy part for us is that Stan started off coaching. Stan Van Gundy was the coach. So he coached us for 20 games. So we came in with this mentality. But once Pat Riley came down, and Pat Riley commands the room, he's a great coach. We all had a high level of respect for him. It became simple then. The goal was to win the NBA title, whatever we had to do to sacrifice to win. The one thing about our team that we understood it was Shaq, then D. Wade, and then obviously D. Wade, as the season went along, kind of took over as that offensive guy, and we went behind D. Wade. But we knew it was a 1-year to possibly a 2-year thing. Alonzo Mourning was on his last leg. He wanted to try to get him one. Gary Payton was on his last leg. Jason Williams was not necessarily the healthiest. He was having knee trouble, but he still could play. Then we had Posey, myself, Udonis Haslam. Go down the bench, we still had Shannon Anderson. We had a lot of different bodies that we could throw at him, but guys were old. We were such a veteran team. We knew our opportunity was only right there in front of us, so we had to get it done within the first year or the second year, or it was not going to work.
Antoine, it's great seeing you. We'll check in around the draft again. I want you to have a nice summer. You look like you're ready to go out to dinner and do real business in Chicago tonight, and it's great seeing you.
Thanks.
All right. Antoine Walker, a really good dude.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
It was interesting last night. There was not a lot on television to watch. I watched Cubs-Cardinals for about an hour. Yadier Molina has apparently played for the Cardinals since the 70s or 80s. Other than that, there wasn't. It's interesting that I'm kind of waiting for the draft, regular season baseball. You know, I can hang around for 30, 45 minutes. There's not a ton of urgency with it. So we're in that kind of interesting area where I can't wait for camp. Camp video gets me all jacked up. It's weird. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Well, the Bucks won their first NBA title in 50 years this season, and Kevin Durant thinks they could be building a dynasty for years to come. He said to see a couple of friends become champions was cool, and then Milwaukee forming somewhat of a dynasty with that team. I know it's the first chip, and a lot of people call you a dynasty after a few, but the continuity of that team is something that's impressive, and how they continue to build and add now that they're champions, you can appreciate that.
Yeah, you can. There's more than one way to win in the NBA. There's the San Antonio way, and then there's the Heatles way. And it's okay. I'm totally okay. College football has one way to win, dynasty. Get all the best players.
Yeah.
Like, college basketball mostly has been that for my entire life. Like, the NBA gets the most criticism, and then we obsess about player movement.
People don't like the idea that you can control and demand and then make the amount of money that NBA players make, to which I would push back and say, I don't know, get in the gym.
Yeah.
This is not for you. This is the best athletes in the entire world who worked very, very hard to get there, and they're being paid for their services because they're the only ones on planet Earth that can do what they do. Like, if you are replaceable at your job, in essence, you really can't be complaining when someone's being compensated at the level that they're being compensated for when they're the only people that can do that. That's how this works.
Yeah.
But I understand there's a little bit of hate that goes on when it comes to that. So people like the idea that, well, we did it the right way. Guys didn't demand certain things and guys aren't divas and all of that, which, you know, it only matters when it's not your team. Because I can assure you, nobody in Miami cares about a diva. Bring all the divas down to Miami. We'll take all the attitudes and all the issues,
you know,
if it means we're winning a championship.
It wasn't like it wasn't tough for him. Mike Budenholzer.
I would say he was on the hot seat going into the season.
There's no question he was. Because let's say Milwaukee doesn't win. You start looking around thinking, well, Brooklyn's going to bring everybody back. And, you know, it just bought everybody. When you win that championship, it just takes the heat. Everybody can take in Milwaukee. Everybody
take a deep breath.
Everybody can take it. Like Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay won a Super Bowl. You get like 2 years after that, everybody keeps their job, takes a breath. And and by the way, nobody is really discussing this, is that Milwaukee will be a better team next year because they're now champions.
Yes, if they can retain some of the very valuable pieces that they brought in. Now they have Drew. Are they going to be able to keep PJ Tucker? What are they going to do with Bobby Portis?
I could move off Portis. I really could. I could. Brooke Lopez is valuable. Portis is one of those. You know, everybody's like, you got to bring everybody back.
Don't have to bring everybody back, but if you lose someone that has a specific skill, you better replace it.
Yeah.
Because, look, we're all talking about, I'm not personally talking about dynasty. I think that they are built to be good for years to come, but I also think the Suns are built to be good for years to come. Are you going to win multiple championships with this current group?
I would be somewhat shocked if they didn't get back to multiple finals. No guarantee. If you said they don't win another championship for 5 years, wouldn't be shocked because you don't know what's going to happen. But I would be shocked if you said, Milwaukee never gets back to the finals, because the East right now, I mean, Miami is in a rebuild.
Well,
Toronto's
how many championships do you have to win to be considered a dynasty?
Well, to me, you got to get to three straight championships. If you're getting to three straight championships, you win two. Three is the number for me.
You have to get two, three?
You got to get to three, like Golden State. They won with KD, they got that. Golden State was a dynasty. It's not all about winning. You got to win a couple. But to me, if you can get like Kansas City, if Kansas City gets to another Super Bowl, win or lose, you got yourself the forming of a dynasty.
I think you have to win more than one championship to be a dynasty.
Yes, you got to win two.
Yes, at least two.
And you got to get there 3 years in a row. So if Kansas City gets there and wins, we got ourselves a dynasty.
I think it depends on the longevity. Like, if they don't make it to the Super Bowl this year, but they make it again next year, or they win, you know, 3 years from now, I could still consider that. Well, I mean, we just talked about the Patriots. The Patriots didn't win a Super Bowl for 10 years. Like, but we still could definitely consider them a dynasty because that group, or at least that quarterback and coach, were together for that amount of time. So I think it just depends on how you define a dynasty. But I do think that they're definitely going to be competitive and be at the top of the East for a while.
When the Mavericks won in 2011, you didn't have to be a basketball savant to go, this is probably a one. This is a one out. When the Pistons beat Shaq and Kobe, remember that Rip Hamilton team?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, it was lightning in a bottle.
The Raptors.
Raptors. Like, there are times you know. What Milwaukee is, you know, if people stay healthy,
it feels sustainable.
They could, it feels very sustainable. Titles, nobody knows because players move too much. But I would be shocked if they're not a repetitive Eastern Conference champion 3 of the next 5 years. I'd be shocked if they weren't.
So LeBron's Space Jam: A New Legacy was a hit at the box office during its opening weekend.
You saw it.
I did see it. One person who did not enjoy the movie, though, was the original Space Jam director, Joe Pitka. He told TMZ it took him 5 different sittings to finish watching it. He criticized the soundtrack and the depiction of Bugs Bunny. But his biggest diss was towards the king himself, saying the truth is that LeBron ain't Michael. So a little hateration up in here.
Well, you watched it and your opinion was what?
My opinion is that it's a children's movie. So if you're leaving that theater with a, you know, in-depth critique, then you have something you feel like you need to say about LeBron. Because this was a kid's movie. This is not for you. It is not for me. I'm a 34-year-old woman. I saw the original Space Jam when I was 10 years old. So that's why I like the original Space Jam, because I was 10. You tend to really be embracing and clutch to things that you liked in your childhood. It's a good movie, Space Jam, the original one. It's one of my favorite sports movies, because I saw it when I was 10. If I saw this one when I was 10, I would think it was amazing. It's for children. There's like video games and like corny jokes and getting your dad to appreciate what you're into. It's not for 30-year-olds. Get over yourself.
I know.
It is a children. It's like coming out of Frozen. Like, I didn't appreciate the soundtrack. I didn't know if these characters were developed enough.
It's a kid movie.
Stop taking yourself so seriously. It's a children's movie. It's not Shawshank.
Yeah, I mean, I have said Michael and LeBron and Magic. So take centers out. Michael, LeBron, and Magic are the three best basketball players, non-centers, I've ever seen. And they were all really different personalities.
Yeah.
Like Michael was relentless. Magic was joyful. Magic was fun. Like the perfect nickname.
Magic.
He was just fun. He smiled. He was fun. He was hugging people. Michael was hard and relentless. And LeBron's a little bit of both. There's a little bit of a business cutthroat to LeBron. And he also was more joyful. But we have to remember is that they're different movies because Michael and LeBron are different people. Their background, one grew up, I mean, let's be honest about Michael. Mom and dad and family, he had to, and then he goes to college with Dean Smith. He has this great support system. Well, LeBron didn't grow up like that, and then he didn't play college. So LeBron's background is different, and it's made him a completely different person than Michael. So the movies are going to feel different because the guys are different.
And they're going to be compared to each other because it's Michael and LeBron who are always compared to each other. And everyone loves the first Space Jam. And so they're going to compare it to the second one, which I also think is a mistake because it's not meant to be really a sequel. It's just it's kind of a remake, like with a completely different story.
Has there ever been let me ask this to the audience. Has there ever been a remake or a second that beats a first? in movie history?
Yes.
What is it? I'm trying to think of one. Sequels. Has there ever been a sequel better than the first?
There's one that like everyone agrees on.
The Dark Knight?
Yeah. Empire Strikes Back. Godfather.
Well, Godfather 3 was a disaster. Godfather 2 was good.
Lord of the Rings.
Not many, though.
No, the second one. Like, when you start getting to, like, the third and fourth and the fifth, like, okay, you're getting more
crazy now. Caddyshack 2, not good.
How do you feel about Rocky? Because I really like the original Rocky. You like the original first Rocky movie the best.
I thought the story was more heartfelt, more genuine. It felt more real.
I really like the first Rocky also.
Yes.
But we're not going to talk about that one.
But
Rocky
I guess my point is, it's a losing battle.
But like Creed is a remake, right? Like it's not really a sequel. It's a different storyline, and it was a good movie. So I don't know. I don't want to break down Space Jam.
Was Empire Strikes Back better than Star Wars? Is that the feeling in the movie industry?
Yeah,
the entire control room is yelling yes. I got a bunch of Siskel and Eberts back there that all these guys know all the answers. I thought Star Wars was excellent.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know.
Wasn't Star Wars great?
It was good, yes.
Right.
I don't know. I like the sequel too. But all I'm saying is, it's a children's movie. Don't take yourself so seriously. It's not meant for you. So Lamar Jackson is eligible for a huge contract extension with the Ravens. His deal is expected to be done before those of his draft class, his peers, Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield. He could reportedly get a deal that's worth between $40 and $45 million a year.
I don't have a problem with it. And people say, well, you had a problem with Dak. Because Lamar is the best in the world at something and has won 80% of his games.
He's 30-7 as a starter, as a 1-3 playoff record.
Dak is not the athlete. Dak is not. There's nothing about Dak I go, that's the best in the league. If you look at all the young quarterbacks who are flourishing, Kyler Murray, Lamar, Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, this is why I have questions about Daniel Jones. They all have something, and you're like, oh, whoa. That's why I have questions about Daniel Jones and Baker Mayfield. They feel like guys, and they'll be good if their O-line's good and their weapons are good. Lamar is literally the most dynamic human being on the planet at quarterback. And by the way, he's a way better thrower than you think. His passer rating's in the high 90s, so stop telling me he can't throw.
I just feel like every team has to pay their quarterback. So if you're able to get a deal done early and spread the money out longer and manipulate the cap, and you know this is going to be your guy, then do it. Like, I don't have a problem with the Browns waiting another year to see what Baker does this year. But if Baker does what he did last year, you got to sign him. Like, everyone needs a quarterback. So this idea of, like, how much money they deserve what the market says quarterbacks are worth. Like, if you are obviously not the guy, then you can start having those conversations. But that's why I always push back on Dak. What are you going to do without him?
Well, take out Mahomes. Who hasn't Lamar beaten? Nobody's beating. I mean, honestly, take out Mahomes. Brady is beating Mahomes, and that's about it in the league.
Yeah.
Brady is beating Mahomes.
It's acceptable to lose to Mahomes.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And Randy Reid. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
By the way, Brady, do we have that bite on? Brady's talking about leaving the door wide open. I've said this 2 years ago. I'm not going to speculate when he leaves. I'm going to enjoy Tom Brady when he's here. I'm happy with it. Like, everybody picked apart Tiger Woods in a decade that he was the most dominant golfer ever. At some point, I don't understand the LeBron haters. Just enjoy it. He's like the best, second best basketball player, first best basketball player ever. Just enjoy Tiger Woods. Enjoy him. Enjoy Brady. I don't care when he leaves. I'm happy that he's here. But he didn't talk about extension and keep playing and blah, blah, blah.
You know, mentally, I know how to prepare, you know. So I think a lot of those things are, it's really maintaining a championship level of play. It's not about, you know, how much better can I be at 44 than I was at 38? It's more about, am I at a championship level as a quarterback? If I am, I'm going to play and I'm going to compete because I love it. And I love playing the game. So, you know, naturally, I think for people, it's always easy to say, well, you know, what more is there to prove, or why keep playing? I play because I love the game. I play because I love to compete. You know, we shouldn't stop our life, even though we love something, because it's just someone puts an arbitrary timeline on that.
The one thing Brady does have an advantage over is the three best teams besides Tampa in the NFC are all in the same division. Seattle, the Niners, Rams have the best rosters. A along with Green Bay, and Green Bay's imploding because of Aaron, so eliminate them. The Saints did, Breeze retires, and the Rams, Seahawks, and 49ers are going to beat up on each other, so only one of them gets home field advantage in the playoffs.
And Arizona is pretty good, too.
So you start looking at Tom. Tom is so functional at this point. He can lose athleticism. He is so functional and detailed that as the rest of the division beats itself up in the NFC West, and now Breeze is out and Aaron's eventually out, if Tom was just functional, it guarantees a fairly high level of success. Because I think the high end of the AFC now is better than the high end of the NFC. I think Buffalo, Kansas City, you and Baltimore, Cleveland, we'll see. Those three with those quarterbacks, next 10 years, they're in the playoffs every year. So Tom's timing is good. Everybody's rebuilding in his division, and three of the four other rivals are in the same division and all beat each other up. It's like the SEC. The only one, you know, you're all beating each other up. If you put Georgia in the Pac-12, they win it going away. Instead, they can lose to Alabama and they lose to LSU. And so Tom's timing is very good. If he's functional, which he is, he's going to maintain a high level as long as he doesn't have an injury. I mean, Breeze, last 3 years, couldn't throw the ball down the field. Ben looks old. Tom doesn't look old. And he's more functional, probably, than both. Emmanuel Acho next, talking about that Texas Longhorn situation. It's The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Emmanuel Acho is the co-host of Speak for Yourself, best-selling New York Times author. He played at Texas, all Big 12, in fact, NFL for several years, Browns and Eagles. And I thought today was a perfect day to bring him on today. He came in early for this, which he doesn't have to do, and I appreciate that. So my takeaway on the story that Texas and Oklahoma are going to tell the Big 12, nice knowing you, be careful what you wish for. I think they feel like the Big 12. I'd rather see him go independent. If BYU can do it, Texas can. Let me start with this. Why would Texas leave the Big 12?
It makes all the sense in the world. The SEC is the axis on which college football spins. And if you are Texas and you, to a degree, realize that, you say to yourself, if you can't beat them, join them. Now, not literally if you can't beat them on the football field, but the SEC's revenue last year was $730 million. The Big 12's was $409. So if you can't beat them from a fiscal perspective, maybe join them. You're Texas, and you might be thinking to yourself as an alum or even as someone who's there now as a fan, Texas and Oklahoma, they hold the Big 12 conference up. So, like, maybe you kind of get tired of holding them up. Not that Texas is all that great record-wise. Let's be real. Texas hasn't been great in a while record-wise. Oklahoma has. So maybe you get fatigued of holding this conference up. Why not go power a superstar brand like Texas with a superstar conference like the SEC?
Okay, so I'm going to sound real West Coast snobby, but Texas A&M, to me, would sell their soul for a football win. Texas is a more regal brand. It's very progressive. It's very refined. That's why I say I'd go, I think they're a warm weather Notre Dame. They could go independent. They don't feel as desperate or as intense as the SEC to me. They feel more Pac-12 than SEC.
I understand why you say that.
I know it's snobby.
No, it's not. It's that you are what you're comprised of. So my first 3 years at Texas, we go to the Fiesta Bowl, we're 12-1. We go to the national championship game against Alabama. We were not snobby. We were grimy. But that's because our defensive coordinator was Will Muschamp.
Yeah.
Former head coach at Florida, former head coach at South Carolina. My senior year, though, Colin, my head coach was Manny Diaz. My defensive coordinator was Manny Diaz, not my head coach. Manny Diaz.
Miami
with the chains. Different. We were not that grimy my senior year. Defensively, we were still good, but we were grimy under Will Muschamp. So now with Sark there, where'd he come from? The SEC. O-line coach, where'd he come from? The SEC. Safeties coach, where'd he come from? The SEC. So Texas, I think, has enough of that with now the new coaching, has that grimy factor. But then you look at Oklahoma. Why did A&M make such a big shock value when they joined the SEC. Because everybody in the SEC is like, what the heck is going on here? Why is that quarterback not under center? Why is there not two running backs behind the quarterback? What is this? What are five receivers doing spread out wide? Now, it's different now. The SEC has adjusted. But Oklahoma's going to shock the SEC if they join that. Shock them. Colin, it's easy to prepare for Oklahoma in 2 weeks before a college football
playoff game. Well, bowl. 4 weeks. Bowl 5 weeks.
It's easy to do that. Try preparing for Oklahoma on 3 days' notice. It will keep you up the entirety of every night.
Well, when A&M came in with Johnny Manziel, Nick Saban struggled with him.
Bingo.
Yeah. So, no, I do think, I've always said, Oklahoma multiple times has played SEC teams and done a very nice job. They are a pain in the butt to face. And by the way, they now land the best quarterback in the country every year. So, and once again, they got the best quarterback in the country. I think it's tougher for Oklahoma because they have that rivalry with Oklahoma State. So I think it could be messier legally. I think it could be messier for Oklahoma. But how about this? This morning, somebody on our staff was funny. I said, I don't want to be a bully with the SEC because I watch it and it's great. I said, but, you know, it feels like Texas is too sort of slick. They're too refined. And one of the guys in the staff said, and they're too bad at football to join the SEC. So here's my question. Isn't it easier for Texas to get to the playoff facing Texas Tech instead of LSU?
That is genius, but you have to, you can't look through the peephole. You have to open up the door, right? Looking through the peephole saying, of course it's easier to get through the playoff through the Big 12. You only have to beat Texas Tech and Kansas State and Baylor and TCU. But if the playoff is going to expand, then it becomes irrelevant. Because if the playoff is going to move, if the playoff is at four teams, then yes, stay in the Big 12. But we all know more than likely the playoff is bound to expand to 12 teams, in which case it doesn't matter if you are in the Big 12 or the SEC. If you're in the Big 12 and it's a four teams, undefeated, one loss, you'll go to the playoff. But if it expands to 12 teams, then you're fine. It's irrelevant. And so, yeah, if it's a four-team playoff, I get it. But knowing it's going to expand, get to the SEC because a two-loss SEC team will get in. There could come a day in a 12-team playoff when a three-loss SEC team gets into the playoffs.
No, I totally agree there. They're going to get at least four teams in. Some years five, and I have no problem with it at all. How about this one? Is that SEC teams are now poaching Texas for players because of A&M's inclusion in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Texas is saying, you know what? We already do fine in Texas. But if we go to the SEC, we'll get Atlanta players. We'll get Florida players. Could Texas, because we know this is a football decision, Cristel Conte and Sark, you think it's possible they sat down and Sark said, hey, Lincoln Riley may say this, I can get more Florida guys if we're in the SEC. So what if they poach Texas? We do well in Texas. Is some of it just recruiting?
It's all recruiting. You need as many bartering chips as possible. The biggest chip that Texas uses typically in recruiting beyond the brand of Texas is, well, Texas has its own network. So when you're sitting with the 18, 17-year-old kid and his parents, you can watch your son every day, all access shows. You can watch him 24/7. You can do all of this. Texas has its own network. The problem is Texas can't say we play in the best brand of conference. Yeah. Can't say that. And so when you're trying to convince a kid to come to Texas, well, when he goes and he sits in Saban's house, Saban will just say, come on now, you know you want to play in the SEC, son. And all of a sudden, they have the big joker, so to speak. They have the trump card. But as soon as Texas can now neutralize that, the playing field's level.
By the way, I said the Cowboys and the Longhorns, too much ego. Football's an egoless sport. And they're my knock on Texas. And this
Colin,
is
are you saying I'm cocky?
Not you, per se.
Okay.
What I'm saying is Texas football's underachieved for 25 years. Too much meddling, too many big ego boosters. That's my takeaway. There's no reason Texas football is not a top three program in the country. They got more players than Ohio. Why is Ohio State there and Texas isn't?
Golly. Put me on the spot, Colin. You know I'm an alum.
By the way, same argument I make for USC. USC and Texas, there is no excuse they're not top five programs. None.
The problem, I think, with Texas, the Cowboys, USC, Michigan, is the current players rest on the success of the former players. When you show up, let's talk Cowboys first. I don't have to be so personal. When you walk into the Cowboys facility at One Cowboys Way over in Frisco, Texas, As soon as you walk in, there are $1 million worth of chandeliers. True story. I used to work there for 2 years. $1 million in chandeliers. So before you ever have to earn anything, you're given everything. How the heck are you going to be good? You don't have to grind. At Texas, I played on probably the second or third best team in Texas history my sophomore year. We go to the national championship. Then I played on the worst team in Texas history the next year. We go 5-7. What was the difference? The difference was we lost the hunger. We went to the ship. Two previous years, Colin, we were 23-1. We'll roll out of bed. We'll beat everybody. We'll be undefeated.
That sounds like ego.
It is, but it's ego that you garnered because of other success. So in theory, they are it's a pride issue, but you got to strip that back. And I think that comes down from coaching.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Saban, you're not going to have much of an ego with Saban. Bingo. Yeah. I mean, college football is. It's coaching's almost everything. It really is.
I was saying this before, talking to the producer. How many elite coaches are there in college football? I think the elite coaches dictate elite programs. It's that simple.
About six.
Bingo.
I had that conversation with a buddy the other day. Speak for yourself. Co-host Emmanuel Acho. Texas. He looks like Texas today. Look at that. You really do. You match our set. You match the Longhorns, everything. They're